All views expressed by the host or guests are solely their own opinions. Nothing stated in this podcast should be considered a specific endorsement to make any particular investment or follow any specific strategy.
Hey, Nicola. Welcome to All in Bitcoin. I'm excited to talk to you about Bitcoin banking, adopting Bitcoin and beyond. But first, let's get to know you a bit better with my 21 takes on you. Ready?
Yeah, sure.
Tell me about a piece of tech you wish existed.
I've been spending the last 20 years building tech, I guess. And for me, if something doesn't exist, I might want to work on it. For instance, AI. It's going to come whether you want it or not. And I'm curious how will the world look like in 5 or 10 years, you know, because it's going to be very disruptive. And so, yeah, AI is certainly something I'm thinking a lot about.
What's a childhood dream you still think about?
That's a challenging question. I mean, I think when I was a kid, I was often playing with games, like video games. Sometimes I feel being a Bitcoiner, you live in a parallel world because like it's just like not the physical world, it's maybe the digital world. And when I was a kid, I wanted to escape to this like video game. And I feel today as an adult, being in the Bitcoin space, there is a lot of parallel with that.
What motivated you to leave France?
I left France 10 years ago because I started a company that was in the world of tech. I was building virtual reality software. I start to have a lot of clients in California, in Silicon Valley, and therefore it makes sense for me to move there to be closer to my clients.
So you have the experience of running a company in France and running a company in the States. What's the difference?
It might be easier to start in France. Like there is a lot of help from government subsidies you can get. But as soon as you want to scale a company in France, it's very hard. And regulation making it almost impossible to build anything in the space of Bitcoin at least. So I definitely think there is a lot more opportunity to scale a company in the US versus France.
A hidden gem in El Salvador.
La Ruta de las Flores.
Why is that?
I think there's a lot of beautiful cities there, and the weather is great because it's more in altitude and you know it's not hot compared to most other parts of the country. And I think it's a good place to visit.
Mm-hmm. The first thing that comes to mind when I say the European Union.
I don't think in 50 years the continent of Europe will be in a better shape than it is today. I see El Salvador as people are optimistic and in Europe, I think there is a lot of doom and gloom.
Yeah. What's the most unexpected lesson you've learned?
Probably that building in the Bitcoin world is the most challenging industry to work on.
Why is that?
Fighting the odds for everything. Like on one hand, you're building technology for sovereign individual, but those people are low time preference. So typically they might not want to spend money on, you know, goods and services. So you have a lot of pressure from government. Funding in this ecosystem is much scarcer than in other industry. If you compare crypto versus Bitcoin, there is like 100 times more funding in the crypto space. And maybe the Bitcoin for corporation like is changing a little bit that, but that still doesn't mean there's a lot of money for people building tools in the Bitcoin ecosystem. So building as an entrepreneur in the Bitcoin space is very challenging. And when I started 6 years ago, I would not have guessed that it would be as challenging.
Your favorite saying?
Don't trust, verify.
Okay. What's a book that changed your perspective on life?
I remember vividly reading The Sovereign Individual.
Yeah.
In 2020 when COVID was around. And in this book, it's being described that a perfect solution that government may be using to prevent movement is a virus. And this book was written in the, I think, 1998 or something like that. And this book was so on point on so many things. I think that's certainly a book that made me think a lot.
So if you could only keep one gadget for a year, which one would it be?
Oh, probably a laptop.
Where were you when you first discovered Bitcoin? Paint me a picture of that moment.
So because my first company was in the virtual reality space, I had a lot of GPUs. In 2017, there was this demand from miner in the Ethereum space to buy all the GPU in the market. And so the price of GPU skyrocketed, which is like not something normal. And for me, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, GPU is a mature market, you know, it's like something new. So being disrupting the supply-demand balance. So this really started in 2017 as a, I guess as a curiosity on, yeah, what's a miner.
Why do you think fireworks have such an impact on people?
It's a good question. I don't know. I don't really enjoy fireworks too much. I mean, here, I know in Salvador there are fireworks all the time. You know, it's like 2 p.m. and daylight. And there is a book from the Prime Minister of Singapore, Lee Kuan Yew. There is a section in the book where he said, like, because fireworks was very popular in Singapore. Mm-hmm. But at some point, there was a massive incident related to fireworks, and he decided to, like, okay, I don't know, he banned fireworks. And I'm wondering, when will this moment happen in El Salvador?
Mm-hmm. A myth you wish people would stop believing?
Fiat currency.
That's a good one. A risk you took that didn't pay off?
When you're an entrepreneur, I think, your job is to learn from those like mistakes and make as many mistakes as you can, as fast as you can, and learn from here on, you know, it's going to be okay.
I believe you used to hold, but have since changed your mind about.
I mean, that might be a controversial take in the Bitcoin industry, but the idea that everybody would have their own key, I don't think that anymore.
You don't?
No. And I think there are new innovative solutions, you know, coming to the market. Like there is this seedless solution that was presented by Block, Jack Dorsey company, which is a new design space being explored. But I mean, here people will hold their own Bitcoin, but not with a seed. Like I think there are certainly some interesting things here. People are used not to take responsibility, right? And so it doesn't go well with Bitcoin, right? And so as more and more people will need to use Bitcoin, I'm wondering how this will work.
Your thoughts on El Salvador remaining under a state of emergency since March 2022, even though the US ranks it as one of the safest countries to travel?
As far as I understand, a lot of the gang member would need to be released if it was not a state of emergency. So,
okay.
I mean, on one hand, I didn't know that. I don't have the detail, but I think there is a dependency on the fact that the state of emergency was used to make sure that all the gang members could be in prison quickly. Mm-hmm. Without the state of emergency, I think it would not have been possible to bring safety to El Salvador.
How do you think El Salvador stepping back from the Bitcoin legal tender law early in 2025 might influence how other countries approach Bitcoin?
It's not necessarily that El Salvador wanted to step back from Bitcoin, but they were basically forced to by the IMF. It's very clear that, you know, international organizations do not want, I think, more countries to adopt Bitcoin. But for me, it makes little sense for why IMF was asking so much restriction on Bitcoin, because it's not that the country in El Salvador is running on Bitcoin, right? The country is running on the dollar. And it's not based, I think, on actual data. It's more like a marketing/PR than like economic risk.
Well, thanks for sharing, Nicola. Now we know you a bit better. Next up, do you think Bitcoin has failed as a medium of exchange?
Certainly not. I think it takes time. In 2019, I guess, when I started working full-time on Bitcoin, like you could not pay anything with Bitcoin. And that was one of the reasons I started a wallet here. It's certainly, I would have expected faster adoption than what we currently have, but I was in the US like 10 days ago and I could, you know, pay for a burger in the US with Bitcoin. Like that was certainly unexpected some years ago. Being in El Salvador, I can live on Bitcoin. I have to choose where I go. Like I cannot just go to random places, but it's easy to live on Bitcoin if you just do a little bit of work. We need to make the tool better and to have more people adopt Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. But I think it's going the right direction for sure.
Why are people so excited about stable coins if they just hold a dollar?
If you just want to send money across border, you don't have to take the volatility risk. And so if I'm in El Salvador and someone in the US need to pay me or I need to pay them, like with a stable coin, I can create a wallet. I don't need necessarily to ask for permission. And so it's more straightforward, I guess, than Bitcoin. But of course, stable coin are, at the end of the day, dollar in a bank account somewhere. And so it's not permissionless. It's more practical for maybe company to start using it if they want to pay their employee or pay their supplier. But yeah, it's a good medium of exchange. And hopefully companies that maybe will not use Bitcoin at the beginning will start by using stablecoin. Then they learn about key management, you know, using wallets. And then the step to go from here to Bitcoin is a smaller step versus like going to maybe just your dollar in your bank account to Bitcoin directly.
So could stable coins make Bitcoin stronger?
I think it's a complicated question because on one hand, it's possible to think as stable coin as a non-worm for Bitcoin. On the other hand, they are competing against each other because if you're going to start using stablecoin as a means of exchange, you know, you're not going to use Bitcoin and vice versa. So there's definitely a competition between those two. If we get a lot of stablecoin adoption on Bitcoin, it will be on top of Lightning. And I think that it's a good on-ramp to Lightning also, like to have stablecoin on Lightning.
Am I right by saying that Paolo announced already Tether on Lightning?
Yes, during the Plan B forum, but I don't think it's live yet.
A partnership they announced. So what are the AI agents going to use?
There is this new economy being built in front of our eye. We start seeing this like agent economy. There is a technical protocol that is being built that's called MCP. And it's quite fascinating to think about like, okay, but either as a human or as an agent, like which monetary system, which protocol, you know, are those agents going to be using? And most likely we're going to see more adoption, I think, with stablecoin, even for AI agents, because there is a lot of builder on the stablecoin side that are trying to address this problem. For me, it will make a lot of sense that Lightning is taking a big market share in this system. But I don't see enough builder in the Bitcoin space that try to address this problem. But I would love to see more happening here.
How do you see banks in the US, Europe, Asia, and other emerging markets adapting to Bitcoin and stable coins?
So in the US, the previous administration was clearly against Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. The banks that tried to use another Bitcoin in any shape or form were shut down by the regulator. The two most prominent examples are Silvergate and Signature. Signature was even like just like killed really by the government because the bank was
solvent
and Silvergate shut down voluntarily because the regulator said you can't work with Bitcoin and crypto company anymore and this is 100% of their business. So basically they had no business anymore. And that happened like maybe 2 years ago. The current administration in the US is doing 180 degrees, and now every regulator is giving the green light that you can, as a bank, like adopt Bitcoin. And I think that's extremely exciting to see. In Europe, I don't think this shift is happening. I think Europe in my mind, will probably be the last continent to adopt Bitcoin, at least from a regulation standpoint. El Salvador is, you know, despite this IMF ruling, I think, want to see more also adoption of Bitcoin for financial institutions.
Do you think that Salvadoran banks are adapting to Bitcoin and stablecoins?
I think the government would like to see more adoption.
Yeah.
And something to understand is that even if El Salvador adopts Bitcoin as a legal tender, mm-hmm. the banks themselves, they're using the US dollar and they have corresponding bank in the US. So really, El Salvador is like a layer two in the banking system. It's a layer two on top of the layer one, which is a US system. And if the US, as it was the case previously, is saying banks are not allowed to use Bitcoin, banks in El Salvador are not allowed to use Bitcoin either. And so now that the US is opening up to, yes, you know, it's more friendly to Bitcoin, El Salvador banks will also be able to use Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. What do you think will happen first? Bitcoin companies becoming banks or banks offering Bitcoin services to their clients?
A lot of Bitcoin companies want to become banks.
Mm-hmm.
So far, they've not been allowed to, but I think it's changing. But also banks are actively looking to offer Bitcoin services. So it's already happening, I think. It will happen simultaneously.
Can you explain what a Bitcoin-backed loan is?
Yes, so it's the idea that you deposit Bitcoin as collateral. So let's say you want to have $100,000 to have a deposit to buy a house. And you have two Bitcoin, and the price of Bitcoin is $100,000. So you deposit those two Bitcoin at a bank, and they give you 50% of the value of the Bitcoin in cash, and now you can buy your house. And then you will repay the interest and the $100,000 over time.
What do the terms margin calls and liquidation thresholds mean?
So in the example of those two Bitcoin and $100,000, the idea is that when you have two Bitcoin, you have twice as much as collateral as the value of the loan. But now what happens if the Bitcoin price go down? If it go down from 100K to like 50K, now two Bitcoin are worth $100,000, which is also the value of the loan. The reason why a lot of banks and financial institutions are interesting to offer Bitcoin-backed lending is because there is no credit check on the customer. You can get a loan very quickly because there is no risk because they hold the collateral. But now if the collateral go down in value, at some point, the bank will need to liquidate this Bitcoin to get the dollar back, or they will ask the customer to add more Bitcoin. And so if the price of Bitcoin is now 50K and I have two Bitcoin, so it's like $100,000, but my loan is also $100,000, I could say I'm going to deposit another Bitcoin. So now I have like three Bitcoin on the platform. And the value of my collateral go from $100,000 to $150,000. And the idea of margin call is that the bank will say to the borrower, hey, you know, the price of Bitcoin is going down. You should add more collateral. Otherwise, we are going to liquidate your Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. What happens if Bitcoin's value rises significantly after taking the loan? Can borrowers reduce collateral or borrow more?
If the price were going from $100,000 to $200,000, now maybe instead of having two Bitcoin deposits in the financial institution, I could withdraw one Bitcoin and therefore reduce my risk. There are maybe downsides that I guess might make sense to explain with doing Bitcoin back lending. One is there is the you can get liquidated. But I guess the liquidation is like anyone that enter into this type of loan should understand the contract, right? Like if the price will go down, I will be liquidated, or I need to add more Bitcoin, or I need to pay back the loan quickly. But there is another set of risks that exist and that is probably not going to be in the fine print of the contract, which is what if the company I'm working with goes out of business? Mm-hmm. Or maybe what if this company is malicious? And here it's pretty bad because now you deposit us to Bitcoin, you get $100,000. But let's say a week later, this company goes out of business. Now you lose $100,000 because you deposit the equivalent of $200K. You just have a loan for $100,000. So of course, you may not repay the loan necessarily, but you deposit twice as much as the value of the loan you get, right? So like, and therefore you don't want to leave necessarily too much collateral in the financial institution because you don't have control of this money at this point. If you look from historical example, Celsius or FTX were two examples of companies that really didn't use the collateral in any proper way. There is a lot of way to mitigate those risk. I think it's important that borrower like demands us like cryptographic proof.
Yes. So what's Lana and why did you build it?
So Lana is a software that helps financial institutions to offer Bitcoin-backed lending product. And it's one of the products we have built over the last year. We built it because we see a lot of demand for this type of product. So Galloway, my company, is working with banks that want to adopt Bitcoin product. And this is one of our focus currently. A bank will need to spend quite a bit of time to think about, okay, if I want to offer a Bitcoin-backed lending product, like what do I need to have and how do I monitor the collateral and how I generate the interest and the obligation interest. So we help a bank to go to market faster.
Who controls the customization?
So it's on GitHub, so anyone can have a look at it. Obviously, it needs to be customized by whoever might be using it, because depending on the jurisdiction, typically doing borrowing and lending, it's regulated activity in most countries. And government might have law to prevent like interest going to 100% or 200%, like shark loan type of thing. And so in most countries, if you want to offer lending in general, like you need to be regulated. You need to make sure the software map to the country you're operating with.
Who owns and holds the Bitcoin during the loan?
So typically the way it works is in Lana, you have settings which sets the custodian you want to use. What we see so far from the market is most banks that want to start offering this product, they don't want necessarily to custody the Bitcoin themselves yet. So they prefer to work with established custodian. And so when you set up a new Lana instance, you can set the different custodian you will be using. And so the custodian effectively holds the Bitcoin, but it's typically in the name of the bank because the bank might have to liquidate the collateral if the price goes down. And when the loan is finished, typically the borrower gets back its Bitcoin.
Now, can banks using Lana rehypothecate clients' Bitcoin collateral? And how is transparency guaranteed?
There is nothing inherently forbidding, I guess, a bank to do rehypothecation. But it's really why I think borrowers should ask for lender or the bank to like have proof of address, because I think we probably don't want to see another wave of like Celsius and FTX.
Yeah. I'd like to play you a short clip from my interview with Alex B.
Yeah, sure.
One application that one of my friend Shazan at Lava is building, which is a DLC-based Bitcoin-backed loans. So in the same way that Bitcoin-backed loans have been very popular over the years, but always having to rely on centralized third party to sort of custody the Bitcoin collateral, we have the technology available now to build exactly this kind of financial product, but strictly on-chained, enforced by on-chain rules, using, of course, what we call like an oracle to keep track of the, to sort of like a report on the price of Bitcoin, but you can use different oracles to sort of like reduce the trust in a single one.
My question here is, what do you think about this? Do you see Lava's model competing or complementing Lana?
That's, I think, a very interesting model, but there is some downside on the liquidity side of thing because it's a lot more expensive liquidity-wise to do that. And so in my mind, it will stay as a niche market for the time being. Like, I don't see a lot of liquidity going there. I think what we're building is more mainstream and will allow for more amount of money to enter the ecosystem. What we're doing is more centralized, but because it's more efficient, will allow to have lower interest rate, I think, in the longer run. Today, if you think about the interest rate, it's maybe 12-13% on loan that you want to take against your Bitcoin, which is extremely high, right? If you want to buy a house, maybe interest rate is like, I don't know, 5-8%, depending on the country. And so if banks adopt this type of loan, like Bitcoin-backed loan, and there is more money in the ecosystem, more liquidity, the interest should go down, and it's useful for Bitcoiner because now instead of borrowing against my Bitcoin at 13%, if I can borrow against my Bitcoin like 5 or 8%, you know, I have to sell less Bitcoin, I guess, to cover my interest.
Is Lana open source?
Okay, so we have different set of repository in our GitHub. Some have different license. There is some in typically Apache 2 license, which is under the definition of open source, and Lana, which is a new product we've launched, is under a Fair Source license. Fair Source says that, for instance, a bank can use it on their own if they want, but a company cannot compete with us using Lana.
Mm-hmm.
And so if tomorrow there is another company that will be created and say, you know what, there is a lot of interest in this Bitcoin-backed lending product and we'll offer this product to other banks, the license prevents that, which is why it's not open source, because there is some restriction on the use of the software.
So a few questions about the Adopting Bitcoin conference that you organize. What inspired you to start adopting Bitcoin?
So 5 years ago, after the Bitcoin law was ruined, I realized that no one here in El Salvador really knew what to do with that. And so for me, the idea to start adopting Bitcoin was to, you know, make sure there is education on what is Bitcoin.
What's one topic or a speaker you haven't had yet, but you would love to include in the future conference?
I mean, I think adopting Bitcoin has been around for 5 years. I mean, it will be the fifth session this year. We have covered, I think, everything over time. Probably the first year was very tailored to Lightning and very developer focus, because the idea at the time is like, okay, Lightning is still very new, but now there is a country that is adopting it, and maybe there will be millions of people using it, like in the upcoming year. So we need to bring the community together to see what are the problems that people are having using Lightning. Circular economy is another large topic, I think, that we have covered over time. I think probably adopting Bitcoin is one of the conferences where you see different speakers and maybe some of the more, I would say, larger mainstream conferences that you will see in the US or in Europe, where maybe you will see the same set of speakers. Adopting Bitcoin is really, you will see different things, I think, and that's something I'm glad that, you know, we are doing it.
Tell me about surprising partnerships that were formed at the conference.
There are many companies that have been born after different people have traveled to El Salvador to adopting Bitcoin. That's something quite beautiful to see, right? Like you organize this conference and then people meet there and they decide to start companies. Quite a fulfilling. you learn about that, you know, outside the conference. You don't, you're traveling somewhere and you have discussion with someone that say, yeah, yeah, I start this company and, you know, I met my co-founder in adopting Bitcoin. Like, it's quite fulfilling.
That's great. Lastly, what's the one thing you'd like people to remember from this conversation?
I mean, we talk about Bitcoin backlending, certainly as one of the products that Gallo is focusing on with Lana. When you do Bitcoin backlending, you give away your key, effectively. I think, yeah, nothing beats Stumble, Stacksats, and, you know, like Avalotime preference.
Yeah. Thank you, Nicola, for your time and this generous conversation. I have learned a lot from you. Where can people follow you and your work?
Nicola Burte is the best place to follow me.
It's been amazing having you on the pod, and I can't wait to have you back.
Thank you.